So last week, for those of you that weren't here, we were taking another look at meditative awareness and how meditative awareness is a, you might say, initially more subtle, hidden awareness inside ordinary awareness. That meditative awareness doesn't interfere with what's happening. It doesn't have an agenda. It is unbiased, therefore. It's simply open, non-interfering, non-judgmental. And another quality that I want to get into a little more tonight is that it's spacious. And that meditative awareness clarifies what we call our story that happens in our head about life, about the world, about others, about ourselves, all these areas that happen that could be called the movie of your life. And that story that everyone has to some extent can be all there is in some cases if there isn't meditative awareness, because that story has, of course, ordinary awareness there, otherwise we couldn't even talk about the story. But meditative awareness clarifies that this is in fact a story. It's a narrative. And it's a fiction. So if we say, okay, if it's a fiction, then what's nonfiction? And this leads us right up to where we ended last week, and when Robin said, well, I was thinking, or I'm paraphrasing, that the story was false. And we kind of concluded the evening with the sense that the story isn't false once the story is, you could say, enlightened, once the story is illuminated, once the story is decentralized as all there is, then the story is a totally different thing. The story is really very interesting, compelling, and it is not conditioned by suffering. So I want to take that point and just launch from there tonight. As meditative awareness is recognized, and spaciousness begins to open, reactivity tends to diminish. Emotional confliction, at least, and affliction tends to diminish. Neurosis tends to diminish. Craving tends to diminish. Clinging tends to diminish. Fear tends to diminish. Resistance, defensiveness somewhat diminishes. These are all parts of the story, but these aspects of the story begin to diminish. One experiences life or oneself as less kooky, to say it simply. You might not be completely convinced that you're not kooky, but it's becoming less and less and less of a solid belief that maybe, just maybe, I'm not insane. Maybe I'm okay. Maybe life's okay. There's space to see something more than the neurosis of the story. And when I talk about the neurosis, I hope you're clear what I'm pointing at. I'm talking about all those elements in the story that happen largely in our thinking and our emotional life that cause unsatisfactoriness and suffering. Really simple. Those elements. Meditative awareness starts to clarify those. As it clarifies those, those are seen as empty. They're not solid. They're not so compelling, they're not so habituated. There's literally a loosening of this knot of contraction. You want to call it the ego knot, the personality knot, the identification knot, you can call it anything you want. But the experience is there's a loosening of that. Make sense? Okay. And as that happens, meditative awareness seems to be differentiating the story and differentiating itself from the story. So the seer, if we use the Hindu term, the seer, awareness, seems to be differentiating itself. And this is where one can begin to sense the story is false, because something else is going on here that seems more real. You see, because there can't be a sense of what's false unless there's some kind of sense of what's real, correct? However, to say that the story itself is an aspect of what we are, truly, it's not false, ultimately. What that means is that this meditative awareness, in a sense, initially seems to kind of loosen up out of the story, and that's partly coming out of that ordinary awareness into a space of observation that isn't so vulnerable, that actually has a certain kind of security about it, temporarily. Still don't know what death is, don't really know what birth is. Beliefs about what life is can continue. If there's beliefs about what life is, then there's going to be beliefs about what death is, and those are projections. The only thing that really, really makes a difference in terms of this confusion, this delusion, and this ignorance that we have in our conditioned mind is the direct experience. Direct experiences that begin to loosen up these beliefs and concepts about ourselves and about life. And that's what the meditation is essentially for, is to loosen up these beliefs, these concepts, these images, these projections, these fantasies, which are part of the story. Good so far? So it then seems, and it's a perspective, that as that meditative awareness is recognized, and you could say as it's not ignored, because it's here in all of us, but it's not ignored, it's actually, and this is where people practice meditation, so they become more and more more familiar with this meditative awareness. So that it's not ignored. This meditative awareness seems to be differentiating from the story. Oh, this is real, and this is, you might say, to use Robin's word, false. Now, when I jumped, it's a leap, into saying there's nothing false about the story, and the reason why there's nothing false about the story is because there's actually nothing false or real about anything. False and real are concepts, they're ideas. What does that mean? What it means is that all there is what is happening. Now you could say it differently. You could say all there is what is happening, and what is happening is both false and real at the same time. Or if you'd like, go the other way. It's not false nor real at the same time. Now this gets a little woo-woo and a little confusing if we start thinking too much. So let's not. Because if we're lucky, fortunate, we don't try to figure out something that can't be figured out. We can't think our way through to the answer to what we really are or what we really aren't. So let's not even try. And simply, and I do mean simply, allow direct experience to begin to provide the non-conceptual answer to what we really are, to what life really is. So sometimes in here, and I've, thinking back here, I've gotten in a little trouble to say this. I once kind of said, or more than once maybe, this is a dream. And of course, if we have a concept of the dream as something that happens at night, and then we say, this is reality, that's a dream. We say, that's a dream. Why do we say that's a dream? Because it ended. Well, guess what? This is ending too. The waking states are ending too. They're coming and going, so aren't they a dream also? If a dream means something that comes and goes, then why do we say this is real in the waking state and the dream is a dream? Why do we say that? Because we've been taught to say it. We've been told that's the way it is. Another possibility is because we believe in the waking states as more real than the dream states. But when we're in the dream deep enough, and we all have this experience, when we're in the dream deep enough, we believe the dream is real, and then we wake up and go, oh, God, I wish that didn't end. That was so great. Or, it's a nightmare. I'm glad that's over. Whew, it's only a dream. Change is happening through the whole dance, isn't it? Thank goodness. Worst state you ever experienced in the dream, in the waking state, change had you covered. Even when you forgot about it, it had you covered. It's like, this too will not last. Whew. Strange enough, also, it's a tremendous relief to recognize that the most pleasant, the most blissful, the most happy sensation, feeling, emotion, state also doesn't last. At first, that can be a disappointment. Oh my goodness, I got something. I got it. Did you? What'd you get? Another possibility of seeing nothing is real and nothing is unreal at the same time. This is directly where Zen comes from, this is directly where Zen stays, and this is directly where Zen speaks from continually. Zen isn't some pleasant feeling like, wow, I'm Zen. Let's Zen. You know, it gets some goofy kind of romantic, cool cachet sometimes in language and in behavior. It's just goofing around. It's cartoon activity. We don't even know what Zen means. And anybody who tries to describe it to us will not be able to describe it. Because experience, if it's truly not avoided, keeps pointing to something that's beyond our concepts, that's beyond our expectations, that's beyond our imaginations, that's beyond our beliefs. And so when I talk about awareness, I try to talk about it in different ways, but for tonight, awareness is synonymous with space. Let's play with that. Awareness and space are the same thing, and they aren't a thing. Like this is a thing. Or you could say the body is a thing, or the fan is a thing, or a thought is a thing. Or feeling is a thing. And over the last few weeks here, in different ways, we've been seeing if it's possible to access this space of awareness, or this aware space. And we've been coming at it from different angles, because it's not always clear what angle is going to work for what human being. And it's good that there's different ways to get at it. This awareness is awake. This awareness isn't suffering. This awareness is still. And this actually somatic zones, if you will, or areas where the space can be recognized. For example, we spent some time looking into what's called the central channel in the body, and then we began to just rest into that space. And some of us went looking for it, trying to find it, and wondered if we were or not. Did I find it yet? I'm not sure. Where is it? What's he talking about? I'm not sure I understand that. Am I doing this right? That's the brain mind going off on its attempts to follow an instruction. Space at the back of the tongue. Space at the end of the out-breath. Space between the next in-breath. Are we talking about different spaces or just the same space? Are we talking about one space or different spaces? The suggestion here is there's just awareness, and awareness is space. We're talking about the context within which everything's happening, including the story. We're talking about that which is not disturbed. I spent a night a couple weeks ago talking about the possibility of being undisturbed. We're talking about the possibility, at least for instances, very small maybe, instances, gaps, getting off the wheel of samsara. Not that there's anything wrong with samsara, because samsara is the story, in part. But if that story is flavored, if it's peppered with misunderstanding, with large chunks or streams of grasping, clinging, resistance, fear, sadness, doubt, inhibiting, narrowing belief structures, ideations about what's true and false, neurosis about what's good and bad, judgmentalness, I'm just naming a few of these things. If that story is peppered with those things, that story is a story clearly of degrees of misery. Unless that story is illuminated. You see, because you could go with some classic teachings here and say, okay, there's these five hindrances, grasping, aversion, restlessness, sleepiness, and doubt. The name of the game is not have those. Let me meditate, let me eat right, let me do this and this and this and this, so I don't have any aversion, so I don't have desire, so I don't have sleepiness, so I don't have restlessness, so I don't have doubt. Now, if you actually pull that off, you have somebody who thinks they're okay separate from those things. I worked it out. I don't have any more doubt. And then one of those energies, it could be doubt, comes right back and says, yeah, you think so? The shift is not about getting rid of the state. The shift is about release of identification with the state. And then the state, that part of the story, becomes illuminated by the light of awareness instead of being shrouded in the darkness of ignorance. And that's why our personalities, exactly the way they are, they don't have to change one single bit. Are part of the illumined nature. It's got to be that way. Nothing can get kicked out of the universe. It's already here. You can't slice it up and go, okay, we're going to get rid of that, we're going to like move that over, you know, kick that out. Can we? You could think you're transcending it. And you actually are in a way, but not in the way you thought you would. Because none of this stuff ends up being the way we actually think it will be when we project into it. This is how it is. It's going to be like this. And I think I understand the teachings based on the written word. And then we make it up. We make up our own version of it. It's make-believe. And if we talk to other people, and we trust their view and their opinion, and we go, yeah, yeah, that makes sense, okay. And then we go, okay, I understand. That understanding, in most cases, is so heavily conditioned by concepts. And again, there's nothing wrong with the concepts. But when the concepts are believed to be the way it is, then all we're believing in is thoughts. So simply sitting, as some people will do, and discovering just this organic, profound, mysterious breathing process. Just breathing. If you just sat and you just took one sutra, the Anapanasati Sutra, which was the Buddha's teaching on the breath, and you just did that, never mind anything else, never mind any of the other teachings, you just did that, and you really did it, and you practiced that, and you experienced that. The whole path is there. From ignorance and misunderstanding all the way through to illumination. And many people read the sutra and they conceptually go, it's all here. But that doesn't mean the experiences. They kind of sense it. It's a little bit of the experience, but there's a lot of kind of feeling, imagination, projection. It needs to become realized. And that realization is prior to concepts and beyond concepts, and of course part of the conceptual activity is expectations. The way the mind projects and expects things. Very subtle sometimes. So how is it that everything is real and unreal at the same time? Try it like this. Everything or nothing, because everything is nothing and nothing is everything. More woo-woo, but just let it go through. Why is this real? Why is this unreal? Or if you don't like why, how? How is this real? How is this unreal? This is unreal in that it changes and doesn't last. This does not have any solidity or permanence to it. This. Go anywhere. This. How is this real? Why is this real? Because right now, which is all there is all there is. Right here, right now, in that was just described, there is the possibility of seeing wholeness. If you don't like the word wholeness, oneness. Life is oneness. That's not a concept. Although to describe it to you, I have to use the concept, the word. This is oneness. This is oneness. Everything is oneness. Nothing is oneness. Everything ultimately is no thing happening. And the way that that wakes up is through this recognition of awareness. We will not be able to recognize the unicity of life by continually trying to rearrange the story or eliminate it. Because the idea of eliminating the story or transcending the story is only another story. And it's a very provocative story if you have believed and assumed and experienced that your story is unsatisfactory. And it is, but it's unsatisfactory because of the identification with the story, not because of the story. Everybody's story is absolutely far out and cool. Nobody's more, nobody's less. I don't care what they think, because some people think their story is really cool. You met a few like that? I got a really good story going on here. And then it gets even more weird. Some people look at another person's life, they look at another person's story, and they say, you got something I don't. I want that. I want your story. I want your house, I want your partner, I want your status, I want your job. I want. And of course what's being missed in that is, that's another way in which it looks like my story is unsatisfactory. There's a lot of stuff available to help us in these areas, and the Buddha sutras are one extremely useful resource. There's this one sutra called the Honeyball Sutra. Anita and I were talking about it. It's called the Honeyball Sutra because when the students or disciples of the Buddha heard the teaching in the Honeyball Sutra, they were so delighted. They felt, this is so sweet. What do we call this? Because these names for these sutras, they came out when they came out. It wasn't like the sutra title was always announced at the beginning. It came out in different ways. So they were, oh, this is so sweet. These teachings are so wonderful. This is so good. What is to call the sutra? And the Buddha said, let's call it the Honeyball. Backing up. The Buddha's, this is how it was told to me, or how the sutra told it, both, because I got it in different places. The Buddha went to meditate under a tree in a park. And he's meditating, doing his meditation. And this Sakya's a clan, or it was like a class, or almost like you call it a tribe of people at that time. And they were kind of, in their own story, better. You know, they were clearly up there. There's a lot of caste, and there's a lot of class going on at that time in that culture. Better and worse, and there's way down there the untouchables, and then there's the Brahmins and everybody who got to be cool in their story. That's it. Just, I got a better story. Of course, it wasn't recognized often as a story. It's like, this is real, like, we're better than you. That story's still going on, right? And so this guy, this Sakya, his name was Dhanapani. Dhanapani is walking in the forest there, the woods, and he sees the Buddha meditating, and I guess he kind of knew him, recognized him as a teacher or something. Anyways, he goes up, and he kind of interrupts his meditation, which is a little bit rude right there. But anyways, he kind of comes in and gets right to it and says, so what do you teach? And there were these many times in the Buddha's life when people would just like come go right at it with him, you know. They weren't like, say, you know, what do you eat? You know, they're just like, poof. So what do you teach? Buddha said, I teach non-contention. Gave a few more words. Non-contention. He's given a direct teaching because the guy was contentious. Now, Dhanapani doesn't get it. Scratch his head. He's not getting that this is personally, absolutely on the money for him. And he's not getting how it applies either. So he just walks away. Can you imagine? You're sitting in front of a fully enlightened being. And you don't get what they say to you when you walk away. I mean, it's fine. What a tragedy. mean, if you ever wanted McDonald's, and you really wanted it, and then you got up close, and then wisdom struck, and you turned your car around, and you just didn't eat that meal, or you went off to another place that sold salad, and you felt better about yourself. I acted well today. You know, I acted with right, you know, speech and right action. There was some wisdom, thank goodness, that operated. I turned my car around. I kept my mouth closed. You know, I didn't eat McDonald's. This guy is sitting in front of a fully enlightened human being, and he asks this question, and he gets an answer. He gets an answer that says it all. My teaching is the teaching of non-contention. You know what that means? It means no enemy. No enemy. No enemy. No contention. And he misses it. Can you see the relevance to the honey ball? I don't mean a sweet chunk of flour. The teaching that sets us free. So, the sense of awareness as space. Let's see if we can practice a little bit now with that. And this is going to be a little bit different. What I'm going to be doing as we sit for a little bit now is I'm going to be asking you some questions. Okay, so instead of offering some guiding instructions, I'll be asking you some questions, which will be the guiding instructions. Now, I will preface this with, as you hear the questions, if you try to answer the questions with thoughts, that is not the purpose of the questions. But this is a little bit of a tricky business because from childhood, way back there, before we really kind of knew what was going on too much around what people were doing with us, we were taught, and our brain has become conditioned, when we're asked questions, there's a part of our brain that tries to answer the questions. Have you noticed this? It's like, boom. That's okay for that to come up, but these questions are aimed at that aspect of us that isn't conceptual. That aspect of us that isn't about thoughts. Okay? Ready? Ready?
Maybe.
Okay. All right, so just sit comfortably. And let's have a posture, if we can, that you can just hang in for about 10 minutes and ideally not move. So just kind of see if you can set that up so that you can... Nothing's going to move for about 10 minutes. And if you're not relatively confident that you're in that posture, then adjust your body now. So nothing has to move for about 10 minutes. When I say nothing, I mean nothing, which is everything. Everything that you could ever think or feel or believe is you. Can just be still. Now that which sees that awareness that's spacious, if you like, that which is observing, is that which is observing inside the body? Look honestly and clearly, openly, see what's true. Is awareness inside the body? And if that seems to be true, that it is, where is it? Looking honestly, directly, experientially, is awareness inside the body? Looking honestly, directly, experientially, is awareness outside the body? Is observing, seeing awareness outside the body? Recognize that any thoughts don't have the answer. If awareness, space, observing, is outside the body, where is it? So then, is awareness, space, spacious awareness, inside the body and outside the body. And if it is, what does the body have to do with this at all? Is there any relationship at all between the body and spacious awareness? There's nothing to try to see here, and yet trying may happen. When the words appear and the ears hear the words, experience moves. It's precognitive. Last piece. What is awareness? Looking directly, honestly, clearly, experientially. Is awareness. You may have the sense of something wanting to continue. When any even little taste of fulfillment opens up, there can be a sense right with it that it wants to continue. And that can mean at times the sitting doesn't want to stop. Or there's nothing to do. And there's nothing that's needed. Maybe just a glimmer. Or you could say, a taste of everything, nothing, is absolutely okay as it is. If you'd like to now, you can maybe just take a slightly deeper breath. Let the body move as you're ready. My fingers, hands. Let the eyes open up again when you're ready.